Game Football Saturday continues with WSBT Game Day. Here's your host, Evan Sharpley.
And we're back. Welcome to the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. The Fighting Irish took care of business last weekend in South Bend with a big win over Wake Forest. And it gets even bigger tonight with a huge game against the Miami Hurricanes.
Huge!
The number 3 ranked Irish kickoff at 8:15 p.m. And for the next hour, I'm Evan Sharpley. I'm your host and your tour guide as we prep for kickoff. If this is your first time tuning into the show, it's about setting the atmosphere, giving you a feel for the game day experience. We're going to talk with former Irish players. We're going to discuss some X's and O's. And riding shotgun, as always, is my producer, State Farm agent, Tim Growl. Tim, it's good to see you. You excited? Oh, you have a good week?
Oh, I had a great week. But you know, the buzz around, starting right after last week's game, you can't go ESPN, Catholics versus Convicts, every radio station,
TV. I'll tell you what, they really wore out that 30 for 30 this week, huh? A lot of mileage.
Marketing genius this year to come out this year. And how could they have known that both teams were going to be ranked like this?
Well, and I think that's what's so great, you know, this year is both teams are relevant. You know, the past couple of years that they've played, the last couple of times they've played, neither team had really been in the conversation for a playoff push or, you know, BCS championship game, nothing like that. You know, it's back in the national conversation where you have two teams making their final push, trying to put, you know, a win on the resume that could put them into the Final Four at the end of the year.
I heard a commentary the other night that said, just what you said, the word I can't even say that today.
relevancy.
That they said it's good for football when great both Notre Dame football. And Miami are back in the picture.
And first off, even before that, I mean, the slate of games today is unbelievable. As far, I mean, and I was, you know, I was talking with Sean Stiers a little bit yesterday, and he was asking, you know, what games and what teams who I was rooting for. I want complete chaos.
I'm with you. I love that.
I would love all one loss teams and see what happens. You know, by the end of the year, you know, how the conference alliances, how those the conference championships play in. And how they factor, but you know, certainly a lot of exciting games today. A lot of top-ranked teams, and you've got Notre Dame kicking off in prime time in Miami in South Beach. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that.
And they've got every celebrity down. I think Alex Rodriguez was the celebrity picker today. So Jennifer will be there. Pitbull will be there. I mean, it's
the turnover chain will be there too.
The turnover. Yeah. That's better than the turnover trash can. Which some team had a turnover trash can. When they'd get it, they'd pass this trash can along
the
bench.
That's the new thing, right?
Everybody comes up with the new thing. We're just blue collar this year, bringing it, hammering them, playing strong. What's the word he uses? Gritty.
Gritty.
Right. Used to be gravitas, now it's gritty.
You know what? We usually try to find a way to use the word grit in our show, Sean and I. And I don't think we used it yesterday. It might be
You saved it for me today. Thank you. That was very nice of you to do that.
Yeah, it's all about the grit.
What do you think? Should we get everybody fired up right now and listen to a little something here?
Yeah, let's take it back a few years.
Let's go.
Dawkins wide to the right, Brown in the slot. Conley, the wingman on the right side. Three wide receivers right. They're going to go for two. Back to throw. Look. Has the time. Lost the ball. The pass is set it down.
Got Hall of Fame broadcaster on that call, Tony Roberts, with us right now. The infamous Catholics versus Convicts game. Tony, if you could talk to us just a little bit about the emotions of that that environment, that experience. Paint a picture, if you could, for us, like no one else, like you could.
Well, I'll tell you, Evan. First of all, I think you belong in a broadcast booth myself, because I think you got what would take to make a great color analyst, but that's another story for another day. But anyway, this was a day in South Bend that was made by God. As it could not have been more perfect. Beautiful October weather. As a matter of fact, I think kind of favored Miami as far as the weather was concerned, because it was a very, very warm day. And obviously, Miami and the Catholics and Convicts things, which I thought was unfortunate, because I've always felt that you should never denigrate your opponent, because as you well know, Evan, oftentimes if you do, it comes back to bite you, you know where.
Yeah, and I think that right now is kind of the conversation in present day, is a lot of Miami fans are still feeling a little slighted from that entire, I guess, branding of the Catholic versus Convicts.
Yeah, you know, Evan, this was a different time in college football. Icky Woods just had started. As a matter of fact, he did start it in 1988. He started doing his Icky Woods shuffle in the end zone every time he scored a touchdown. And this was a time when all of a sudden, we never heard about this when we were kids. At least we didn't do it. And I think you, the same goes for you when you played high school football, when you played at North, trash talking. There wasn't any trash talking. That was unsportsmanlike. And there was a lot of trash talk. It was starting to become a national thing. Icky Woods with his dance started to become a national thing in the National Football League. Everybody wanted to do a dance to show that he could be one better than the last guy that scored a touchdown. But anyway, it was just an absolutely gorgeous day. Everything was on the line. You knew it. It was only midseason. It was the middle of the year, but everything was on the line. And one of the longest days I ever spent in my broadcasting career was the year that Jerry Faust announced his resignation. We went down to Miami, and I had to sit through a 58-7 thrashing by Miami. I thought that game would never end.
Run out of things to talk about?
Well, you know, Miami wins the battle of these statistics because they outgained Notre Dame by 150 yards. But seven turnovers, and you're not going to win a football game probably 999 times out of 1,000. And that's what happened to Miami. That happened to be their downfall. And, you know, and one of the oddities in that game, Pat Terrell knocks down the pass that would have won the game for Miami. And if you go back to 1993, 5 years later, at the other end of the field, at the north end, Sean Wooden knocks down a pass against Florida State that would have won the game for them and gotten them the national championship.
We're talking to Hall of Fame voice of the Fighting Irish who called the infamous Catholics versus Convicts game, Tony Roberts. Tony, we heard the final call. If you could kind of back us up, you know, we use the word buzz a lot, and certainly for home games, Irish fans here in South Bend can feel that buzz, and those that have gone down to South Beach for this weekend, you know, I'm sure are contributing to this incredible atmosphere. Talk to us a little bit about pregame or even earlier in the week. What was the atmosphere like? What was that buzz like on campus leading up to kickoff?
Well, this was, you know, like the first game of the century I'd ever been involved in. And you just couldn't wait for Saturday to come along. You just hoped that, okay, we were going to be equal to the task. Notre Dame was unbeaten. Miami was unbeaten. They had this long string going. Jimmy Johnson had done a great job with Miami football. And you knew that it was going to be very contentious. Because then the Catholics and Convicts T-shirts came out, and they were selling like hotcakes. Everybody wanted to buy one on the Notre Dame campus. But it was just an absolutely gorgeous day, and you couldn't wait for the game to get underway. You just hoped that Notre Dame was going to be equal to the task, and obviously they were. One of the things that was, you know, they stuffed the Miami running game. And matter of fact, Miami's leading receiver was their fullback, Cleveland Gary.
Tim Grell and Evan Sharpley from the WSBT studios on game day, recalling the 1988 Notre Dame-Miami game with the guy that called it, Tony Roberts. You know, what I just saw last night, I just heard something. I was talking to a couple of our guests that will be on later on, Chris Zorich and Pat Eilers, about the brawl that started the game in the tunnels and stuff. When were you first aware of what happened down there?
Well, you know, when you're doing a game like that, you're looking at a lot of your notes, and you're doing your pregame thing. And we didn't hear about that until sometime in the first quarter. And then somebody came up to the booth and said, you know, they had a big brawl in the tunnel, and we didn't see any of that. I don't think it was visible from the field. I'm not sure about that. I can't say because I didn't see it. You know, you're always watching the team come out of the tunnel, and because it's kind of thrilling to watch Notre Dame and their coach running out of the tunnel, and you start, you start getting revved up and the juices start to flow and you want to get the game underway, and you know it's just moments away from kickoff and the national anthem and all that, and so you're getting ready, and all of a sudden you hear about this. Okay, they had a little skirmish in the tunnel, and you wonder, is this going to be one of those games where it really gets contentious and people start trash talking, and maybe there's a lot of unsportsmanlike conduct. You know, there was very few fouls in that game. I think there was something like 11, 5 for Notre Dame and 6 for Miami, and Miami had more yards, penalized yards. I think they had 64 to Notre Dame's 56. So the game was a very clean game, but it was hard hitting. I mean, it was rock'em sock'em football.
Steve Walsh was the big passing quarterback coming in the game that everybody was talking about, but it seemed like Tony Rice, he wanted to make his mark. Maybe Holtz, that was part of the game plan, but Tony went to great sakes. They had some really big passing plays in that game.
Well, he did, and you know, the knock on Tony, and it was unfortunate because Notre Dame ran the football back in those days, as they do now. And Tony, he can't pass. He can't pass. There were many times when I saw Tony back or just drop back to throw, and he might overthrow a receiver. He was not what you call a great passer, but he was a good passer. And he passed for 195 yards that day. Passed for 195 yards, although Steve Walsh passed for like about 400. But then again, that's the only way Miami could move the football. And oddly enough, Notre Dame had possession more than by about a minute or so than Miami did. And you know what? When you got the ball, they don't have it. They can't score unless you give it to them. And Miami gave it up 7 times that day. So that worked out well in favor of Notre Dame because they were able to run the football. But Tony had 195 yards. He had one of his better days as a passer. But people kind of forget about that. He could really throw the football, and he could throw the football a long way.
Tony, it looks like there's some parallels between the 88 game and this game tonight. As far as the matchup, the identity that these teams have, you mentioned Notre Dame's resurgence rushing the football, over 300 yards rushing per game. They put up over 700 yards of total offense. You talked a little bit about the passing attack and how that could play a role today with Brandon Winbush kind of taking some steps forward. Talk to us a little bit about the team so far this year, what you've seen from them, and how you see this matchup tonight against Miami.
I love it. I love the fact that Notre Dame has really gone back to a running game. You know, one of the things when back in '88, when Tony Rice had the ball, one of the great plays was that reverse spin, and he'd run the option left, and he'd run behind that big tackle, Andy Heck, and Andy Heck would clear the way as he did in the West Virginia game for the national championship, as he did in the game against Southern California on the coast, which made Notre Dame number one and put them in the title game. Long runs. It's great to see. Well, you watch Josh Adams. People want to see passing is, Evan, passing is thrilling. But there's nothing like watching a guy break through the line, get past the linebackers, and then outrun the secondary for a touchdown. That's, you know, it's like a triple in baseball. Home runs are great, but people still like to see guys run from home plate to third base and slide in there and beat the throw. It's a thrilling play. And it really gets the people energized. There's energy in the stadium. And that day, there was all kinds of energy because Notre Dame could run the football.
Notre Dame rushed 49 times against Miami, and you hit the nail on the head too. Walsh threw for over 400 in that game, but you know they're able to minimize that to a certain extent. And I think tonight, you know, tonight is an exciting matchup. You know, under the lights, obviously, both teams back with within the scope of the relevance of playing in the college football playoff here. If we move past Miami, we look at Navy and Stanford. You know, Notre Dame is able to win tonight. They're going to put themselves in a great position with a great resume. today to make that Final Four. Do you think Notre Dame has it in them to win out these last three games, and do you think they'll find themselves? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is the best Notre Dame football team since back in the 88, 89, and 90 days of Lou Holtz. There's no doubt about that. This is a football, and let's, you know, Evan, as you well know, you've been watching these games. You're the quarterback. You know, Brandon Wimbush hasn't even reached his potential yet. St. Brown hasn't reached his potential yet. Stepherson hasn't reached his potential yet. And Notre Dame is doing this with Josh Adams, a little bit of Dexter Williams, a little bit of Tony Jones. And, one of the guys is the unsung hero here. Is number 38, Deion McIntosh.
Absolutely.
Who in
Absolutely.
The country has a guy, a four-string running back, who can come in and get those yards to finish off a game and keep you on the field? Now, you know when McIntosh is coming in, they're not going to throw the ball very much. He's going to run the football. And yet, he does run the football. He runs the football for yards. They move the chains, and that's exactly what Brian Kelly and his coaching staff are trying to do. Keep possession of the ball and keep the other team's offense off the field. And I love McIntosh. I hope he stays all 4 years because I want to see this kid play.
And I've been talking. I mean, it's you got to give a lot of credit to this offensive line. I've been joking around. I mean, you're able to insert a guy like McIntosh. You've got Dexter Williams in there, Josh Adams, all having great success. I don't know about you, but I think I might be able to run out there. You might be able to get out there and maybe pick up a first down or grab 100 yards per game too. This offensive line has been amazing. Quentin Nelson, I have him as my Heisman candidate, even at a guard position. He's been so valuable to this team, and really the entire offensive line since the Georgia game just continues to get better. A real credit to Harry Hiestand and the type of guys that he's developed, but you have an offensive line that is, that's playing hard-nosed and smash mouth. And I think when you're looking at this matchup tonight, and before we let you go, we'll let you give us some closing thoughts and a score prediction if you would. But, where my eyes are going to be on this game is going to be Notre Dame's offensive line against this athletic front that Miami brings. And are they going to be able to control the line of scrimmage? If they do, I think that they're going to have some great success. So before we let you go, Tony, give us just kind of your assessment on what you're going to be watching tonight and then a final score if you would.
I want to see if Notre Dame can run the football against a good Miami team. They ran the football against a good North Carolina State team, a good Wake Forest team, but Miami has perhaps a little more talent than Wake Forest and North Carolina State and some of the other teams that Notre Dame has played. But having said that, they're still going to have to throw the football. They're going to have to protect the football, and they're going to have to be at their very best. I'm going to go back just a second here. The last time Notre Dame lost on November 11th, 1944. Army 59, Notre Dame nothing. Back in the days of Glenn Davis and Doc Blanchard. Since that time, Notre Dame has played 8 times on November 11th, and they're 8-0.
That's why Tony's
like
here
that
too.
For
that's
a number.
That is why statistics. That's why
Tony,
we got
that's
you,
why
Tony.
We have you on the show right there.
Well, anyway, I think that bodes well for the Irish. They're going to have to. It's going to have to be a complete game, and they're going to have to do a better job than they did against Wake Forest in handling the Miami offense. Miami's got some great players, and Mark Richt is one heck of a football coach. But I think Notre Dame is equal to the task. And you know what? Who wants it more is going to have it. There's not going to be, unless there's a controversial play, you never know about the X factor, how this game is going to be officiated.
Hey, Tony, we really
That's always the X factor in any football game. And did Cleveland Gary fumble the ball in 1988 or did he not?
That'll always be talked about. Hey, Tony,
It's always going to, Cleveland Gary said, he's not going to worry about that the rest of his life, but there's always that question, did he or did he not? And what would football be like if we had instant replay today? Would Notre Dame have played at West Virginia in the national championship game in 88?
Controversy is part of football.
Yes, it is.
That's right.
And the human, and the, you know, humans make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. You know, you asked about Navy. Don't sell Navy short. Don't sell Navy short. Because in 1988, after a couple of days, a couple of games after Notre Dame beat Miami, Notre Dame played my Navy at Baltimore and won 22-7, a game they should have won by 44-7 or 54-7. So you never know if there's going to be a letdown next week. And you know how it is, that last game at Notre Dame, Evan, you know more than better than any of us what it's like to play the last game of the season at Notre Dame.
Hey,
pretty
Tony.
Emotional, yeah.
Yep, Tony, we really appreciate it. And personally, I got to tell you, one of my most cherished friendships over all the years of doing the show is getting to meet you. And my daughter, Molly, heard we were going to be talking, and she said to tell you hi.
Molly is an absolute angel. And you want to score? 24-14, Irish.
Book it right there.
We'll take it. Thanks a lot, Tony.
Have a great day.
On your
you
home
as
for,
well. Thanks a lot.
On your home for Notre Dame football, 96.1 FM WSBT. This is Game Day with Evan Sharpley. We'll be right back with Rocky Blyer.
Game Day Show is also brought to you by Budweiser and United Beverage, Carmella's at McCree's, Creative Colors International, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Hearth and Home, and Kurt Outdoor Living.
Tim Growl and Evan Sharpley on Game Day Show. This is everybody's day to honor their veterans, their dad, their brothers, their cousins, their uncle. We are so honored to not only have a former high-profile Notre Dame and NFL player, but better yet, a high-profile veteran who we salute for his service, and that would be Rocky Blyer. Rocky, thanks for being with us.
Good well,
thank you for
much.
Your service, Rocky.
You're welcome, Kevin.
So did you have some veteran activities this morning already, Rocky?
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah, so we had a veterans breakfast over at Duquesne University.
Awesome.
And it's they've been having it for 19 years. So it was a great kickoff to this day to be able to celebrate. And then I have the Pittsburgh Military Ball this evening, which is one that is encompasses all the branches of the service here in the Pittsburgh area. So it's and I'm emceeing it. So
you do
so
have a day.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, that's right. So that's my day. Now, I'm sitting here waiting for your call, more than willing to talk to you as I'm thinking about what I'm going to say tonight. So,
hopefully, we can provide material for you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Maybe. And we'll see. So,
is that ball at the same time the game is tonight, too?
No. It'll be a little overlap, but it starts at 5:30. So, it's I'll catch the game. I'll catch the most important part, the second half.
There you go.
Rocky was the 67 Notre Dame team captain, and we continue our paying our respects to Coach Barsegian. And if you could, Rocky, just kind of paint a picture for us. We've talked with former players each week on the type of man Coach Barsegian was, the character that he had. And if you could, if there's one memory that kind of resonates with you, we'd love to hear it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I have one memory, but what I was thinking about was when Eric came in and the impact that he had on change. And I suppose just his demeanor and as an 18-year-old young student player, we were very fortunate to be in his first recruited class and to watch what we didn't know what to expect, but to see a team develop, and especially that year in 1964 when Era's first year, and his ability to be able to handle change and to handle the players that he had, veteran players as they were, and not coming off of winning traditions, as you well know. And all of a sudden being able to motivate and change players, put them in different positions, and get the most out of them was an astounding feat of work, but really set him aside as a man that you could respect just to see. Now the following year, in our sophomore and our junior and our senior year, we became more involved, and as you get to know than the man in the system and how he operates and how he, you know, selects his, you know, his staff, and then how he takes care of his staff and he takes care of his people. And all those things become, you know, become a part of that legend and a part of who makes Arrow what Arrow is. And so all of us who have played for him, and even those who've just come in contact with him, you know, he made an impact on our lives and gave us an experience within the school. An experience meaning of the ability to grow, the ability to reach your potential, to play on a winning team, to be associated with success. For us, it was great, to be able to be at the right place at the right time with a man like that.
Tim Grau and Evan Sharpley on WSBT's Game Day. We're visiting with four-time Super Bowl running back, Notre Dame team captain, and most importantly, a veteran and Purple Heart recipient, Rocky Blyer. We've had 9 shows, right, Evan, this year? 9 shows, so we've had 9 different players that have played with Arrow over the years. The very first show, somebody told us about the tower that Arrow coached from. So every show, we have to ask each former player, were you ever called down from the tower? Did you hear your name called out from the tower?
Of course not.
Well, we've only had one that said yes, Arrow. 8 others have said no.
That's right. No, you did. No, no, you did. That's what you wanted to avoid. You did not want to be called. You know, that meant, oh my God, it was like the voice of God coming out. You know?
Somebody called it the pulpit, I think, last week or the week before.
Well, that's, you know, and so it was like, oh my God. Yeah, you know, so, but he, you know, so here was the amazing thing, at least from my perspective, of watching Eric coach from the tower, which one gave his assistant coaches autonomy of what they were doing, you know, rather than having a head coach, you know, kind of looking over your shoulder. And so he was able to watch on both sides of that tower, both the offense and the defense. And so he's watching one and he's watching another. And he would holler. I mean, he would holler at some technique, some mistake that had made in that. And I'm thinking to myself, how did he see that? You know, I mean, isn't he supposed to be over here looking? And, you know, but he had that ability to be able to pick up what needed to be picked up and what needed to be corrected at that moment. And so, it, you know, yes, you try to avoid that situation at all times. So I think I can probably say, not that I remember, not that he ever called my name from that tower.
Rocky, if you could, you know, one other thing we hear each week is, you know, the structure that Coach Parsegian provided, and the 3 E's have come up a few times: effort, execution, endurance. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
You know, I always like those former players who remember all that stuff, you know, because I don't remember the 3 E's, although they were very much part of what he did. So, you know, so it was like, okay, and for most of us, and I think for most of us coming out of high school, in that experience, you know, you reach another step, and that step was organization. Arrow was very organized, knew what he wanted to get accomplished, and you know, he had a practice schedule. And he stayed on that practice schedule. There were times within that schedule, and he gave that responsibility to a third party, to one of the ball boys. And so they just followed the, you know, you had 7 minutes here, you had 11 minutes over here, you had, you know, 10 minutes here, and all of a sudden that horn would blow. And if you're in the middle of whatever it is, boom, you go to the next series or wherever you were going to go. And so that was very impressive. And his biggest reason, and so everything had a reason for what they did or what they accomplished. And the reason for that was that you could give 100% within practice, because you knew practice was going to be, you know, an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 25 minutes, because that's what it is. So it wasn't going to be an hour and a half, and then turn out to be 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes or what it was. So that in every session, you know, you could give your all from an attention point of view and from a physical point of view, and that's how you become better ball players, at least from Mara's perspective. And then it was the fundamental belief of doing your job. So if everybody did their job, and did it the way it was planned, every play on the drawing board, is drawn up to be a success if everybody does their job. So, it's not drawn up to say, we're going to take a loss on this play, but we're going to run it anyway because that's the way it was designed. No, every play was designed to be successful. How successful depended on what you did with it thereafter. So that was a mental set in which you had to adhere to and to remember. And it was the first step in a learning process, different than coming out of high school. And so you get organization, you got a commonality of what success is all about, and you got a reason why you're doing things, not just because it happens, not just because the coach feels that this is the way we should do or doesn't have a clue in how you should do it, but everything we do, and I can remember the biggest thing that we had to do was to get into a left-handed stance and a right-handed stance. And you had to be comfortable with getting to left-handed stance and a right-handed stance. And Era's system is that you always had your inside hand down towards the ball. So if you're on the right side of the ball, you're in the left-handed stance. And if you're left side of the ball, you're in a right-handed stance. You know how difficult that, it was difficult. It was uncomfortable, to be able to learn that. And you'd learn that from your freshman year. Because automatically, the first thing you do, everybody does, is you get down in the stance, boy, you get down in the right-hand stance. Well, no, if you're on the right side, because of the fact is if running sweeps or traps to the opposite side could be the success of that play could be a matter of a half a step. Whether you make that block or the defense gets penetration and closes down the play. So that half step could make a difference. So if you're right side of the ball and you're pulling to the left, your left leg is, if you're in the left-handed stance, your left leg is behind you. So all you have to do, you don't have to take a drop step to pull around the center. You just push off your right foot and you're already that half step to an advantage. And so that advantage might mean the difference of that play being a successful play or not. And so it's all those little things on how you run and how you drop from a quarterback in your footing and what foot and what turn, because it all made a difference. In high school, remember you get one arm over the ball and then one arm under the ball. And, so that changed to two hands under because of you didn't want to be able to drop the ball. And so it was all those little things. It was a learning process as well as an educational process that became just everyday habits that ultimately led to the success of what Era did and the teams.
Rocky, thank you so much for taking some time today. Good luck with your ball tonight and emceeing that event, and hopefully you get to catch the second half.
More importantly, good luck with the Irish.
Thanks a lot, Rock. Yeah, we appreciate it. Have a great night.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to WSBT's Game Day Show on your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM WSBT.
This is Notre Dame consensus All-American and Green Bay Packer Mike McCoy. You're listening to Game Day AM 960 WSBT. Go Irish.
Welcome back to the Game Day Show. I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, and your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM WSBT. Sitting next to my co-host, producer, State Farm agent Tim Grau. Quick shout out to both Marion and Penn for regional championships in football last night. The train keeps rolling for those teams, huh?
Yeah, your quarterback trained.
Yeah.
That you've got are doing really well, real well.
Yeah, they've had a good season. And for the Irish, hopefully the Fighting Irish continue with a big victory tonight against Miami, 8-15 under the lights. And we've got a couple of former players to...
Yeah, let's talk some more about that game. What do you think?
Yeah, why not? Well, we've got a two-time consensus All-American from that 1988 Notre Dame-Miami game, Chris Zorich, as well as Pat Eilers. Guys, thanks for being on today. How are you?
Thank you for having us.
Let's,
I'm doing great. Hey, Z, how you doing? What's up, man?
Chris, let's start with you. We're gonna, you know, we're just gonna kind of let you guys take over the show if you don't mind. We want to hear some stories, Chris. If you want to start, the atmosphere, the build up to that game, and obviously the game itself, and reminiscing now, looking back, what are your memories of that game?
I'll let you have an honor.
Chris, you there?
Yep. Come here. I'm going to let Pat go ahead and have the honor first.
All right. Pat, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, what I remember, let me tell you about being on the radio with Chris. If you all recall, there was that tackle. I'm trying to remember, was it Cleveland Gary in the north end of the end zone, Z, where you stoned him? And it basically set the tempo, I think, for the game, one of the main plays of the game. But the atmosphere too, Evan. I would just say, just coming on that for a second, it's very electric. You can see it on game day this morning, even down there. It's been a while since this rivalry has been reestablished, and obviously with both teams having good seasons, I think you're looking forward to a phenomenal collegiate football game tonight with two teams with a lot of history.
Chris, there's some parallels between this year's Notre Dame football team and Miami's football team and back to 88. If you look at kind of the identities that both teams have established, and both have, you know, made their resurgence this year, both are in contention for the Final Four. You're looking at, you know, Notre Dame's hard-nosed, smash-mouth offensive running attack, a lot of athleticism on Miami's front seven. Talk to us just a little bit about the trash talking, the fight before the game, that type of mentality, that type of rivalry, and how that was established.
Well, you know, it was something that I really believe kind of was in the works for a long time. You know, we had just kind of reemerged as kind of guys who are now being competitive. In the past, they weren't as competitive. But now all of a sudden we have a chance to play very good teams, and we started to play great football. And really kind of what happened, and those folks who are there who may be listening, or those folks who watched on television, you know, we were doing our warm-ups, and they came through our tunnel. They kind of walked or ran through our warm-ups, and they went and did their warm-ups. And then as we were coming back in our tunnel, it just, for some reason, they were coming back too. Now, the fight would have never occurred had their team been held back, but we're both going into the locker rooms at the same time, and when you have that type of friction, that type of excitement, something was bound to happen, and people were trash-talking, and people were fighting. I mean, it was really what I enjoy about college football.
Tim Ground, Evan Sharpley from the WSBT studios, talking with two pivotal players from the Catholics versus Convicts game, defensive tackle Chris Zorich and running defensive back Pat Eilers. Pat, I saw you on the 30-30 special, and it's been a great week. We were just talking earlier about how could they have known that this year this game was going to be so pivotal the same year that they brought that piece out. But in any case, when did you see the shirt? And give us a little background on that story and how that added to all the extra, like the game ever needed, any extra dynamite in it.
Yeah, no, I think if you look back, I mean, obviously Pat Walsh and I were friends, and Chris will remember this too. I mean, I think at that time, if you look at the bookstore that existed then versus the bookstore that existed today, you know, it was probably 1/20th the size. And, you know, as that movie or that documentary pointed out, you know, there were a lot of kids that, you know, made t-shirts. It was just, you know, it wasn't like this official thing, but the shirt obviously drew attention, you know, to the game. And I think, what was it, Joe Frederick in the documentary said the line at Alumni Hall where he and where he was selling the shirts was longer than what you would find across the quad in the bookstore, which again I said was, you know, a lot smaller and you know, might have had, you know, 1/100th the SKUs that they carry today. So I've been, and when you look at in that documentary, the only thing I'd say when you hear the title versus coming to the end of that documentary. It was just a great football game amongst two great teams on a great Saturday afternoon, just exactly like it's supposed to be. You know, I think this evening I got two daughters that have graduated. They're both in Miami to watch the game. I got a text, I think it's 80 degrees and beautiful. You got, you know, two great teams. It's going to be a lot of the similar excitement. I think on game day this morning, you know, Dez was a teammate of mine out in with the Redskins. And, you know, he was saying that game day, I don't think there's been as big a crowd for college game day that there was this morning down on Miami. And it's over a decade that it's been there. So I think the electricity that was in the stadium in South Bend, you know, 30 years ago is the electricity that you see down in Miami for tonight's game. And I think it's just it's phenomenal for their student body. It's phenomenal for the Notre Dame family. And I just wish Chris and I probably both wish we could just have one play.
That's all we're looking for. Just one more play. You know, and Pat's exactly right. And you know, I just wish that every, you know, young person, you know, male or female, that has a chance to play collegiate athletics would just have a chance to be involved in a game like this. You know, let it be, you know, volleyball, women's basketball, men's basketball, whatever it is. But having the chance to be involved in such a spectacular game is really a great experience. You know, you're talking to us, this is almost 30 years later, and, you know, I'm still getting chills as I talk to you about the game, or as I hear Pat talking about, you know, what it takes to have a chance to compete in a game like this. So I just wish that every collegiate athlete had a chance to participate in a game like this, because these are the types of games that you're going to remember for the rest of your life.
This is WSBT's Game Day Show. We're talking with two outstanding Notre Dame players, Chris Sorich and Pat Eilers. Notre Dame gets an opportunity tonight, just like you talked about, big-time matchup against the Miami Hurricanes. Pretty incredible, the turnaround that Notre Dame's made following a drop-off 4-8 season in 2016. Pat, what, you know, in watching Notre Dame this year, what have you seen as been the biggest turnaround as far as the success that they've had on Saturday afternoons?
When you look at last year and just looking at the offseason, I'm a big fan of, you know, Brian Kelly. I'm a big fan of Coach Hiestan, who reminds me a lot of, Chris will remember, Joe Moore, perhaps the best offensive line coach before he passed. And Harry's falling right in that lineage. But, you know, they turned over a bunch of staff last year. They spent, I think, an incredible amount of time. It's interesting, I think, if you listen to Brian Kelly said this publicly, that, the personal relationship with the player happens during the off season. And there was I just tell a quick story. There's a new board in the weight room. I was down there last spring a lot. My daughter, second daughter, just graduated. She played women's lacrosse there. In the weight room, they had a new board where everybody's name on the football team is up there. The first category is satisfied. The second category is hungry. And the third is starving. So I asked the new strength coach, and I think this is going to go to your answer. I said, you know, how do you end up in which of the categories? And he said, well, the first category, satisfied is you got a scholarship, you're in South Bend, you got a pulse, you're going to class, you're going to practice. And I said, so tell me about hungry. And he goes, hungry is you want to become a All-American and you want to win a national title. And I said, well, then what could be the third category in terms of starving? And he goes, it's everything in the second category, but you want to bring everybody on the team with you. And there was only at the time two or three people in the third category. One of them was Quentin Nelson. And now today there's a lot more people on the right-hand side that I think that understand that it's not just about taking care of yourself. What makes Notre Dame great is the commitment to family, the commitment to the student body that goes from administration to teachers to student body to athletes. And so I think they did a great job during the offseason establishing the culture of family that has defined that university for a long period of time. I think the only other thing that I would say
You look at the tackling on defense, and some of the offensive play as well. I think they probably went back to the fundamentals. There's a lot of fundamentally focused football that you're seeing. You don't see busted tackles that often on defense, and you don't see large plays that other offenses, explosive plays are having on our defense. So it would be all those items that I think Coach Kelly and his staff have done a great job of implementing, and you got to give a lot of credit to the student athlete there, the football players who've embraced it. And I just saw this morning, and I'll finish, Josh Adams saying, I'm number 33 because there's 11 people on offense, 11 people on defense, and 11 people on the special teams. That defines, to me, the Notre Dame football team for 2017.
Guys, we appreciate you taking some time tonight to talk to us. Chris, Pat, enjoy the game. Kickoff's at 8:15. We're looking for an Irish victory. Hopefully we get to talk to you guys in the near future as well. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you. We'll be right back. Evan, how about a score?
34-27 Irish.
All right, I'm looking for it. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m., and we'll be back outside the Ivy Court Inn with Alan Pinkett. Stay tuned for Notre Dame football coverage, and then Notre Dame basketball, and then Notre Dame football coverage again. All this on your home Friday Night Irish Football, 96.1 FM WSBT. For Evan Sharpley, Tim Growl,
go Irish.